welcome to the Raging Bull Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Sturgill. Join me as I interview people from all walks of life who've built successful lives, self-made millionaires, entrepreneurs, traders, authors, and experts in their chosen fields. Discover the mindset and motivation to make successful people tick and learn new ways to apply these ideas, lessons, and successes to help you build your own success and live a better life. This week on the show, we have Tayo Roxon. Tayo is a three-time TEDx speaker, author, speaker, podcaster, consultant who has a tremendous story, living on multiple continents, ultimately finding himself in the current space he is. And I will let him tell his story for himself. Tayo, welcome to the show.
It's a pleasure to be on, Ben. Thank you for having me. Looking forward to the interview.
Well, Tayo, you know, you have such a unique story, and one, as we think about it in perspective of wealth, just it seems from what I've learned about you and what I know our listeners are hearing from you, just have wealth in so many areas, including financial wealth, but it wasn't always that way. So I'd love you to just start by telling your story, how you grew up, where you came from, and really how that that story progressed to where you are right now.
So it's a very interesting question you asked, because I was actually talking about this with my girlfriend yesterday. We're talking about wealth and how the world has defined wealth as just financial. And when you have that, it's a very, very, you know, very, very light foundation that can really break, because there's nothing else that can actually build you up. And for me, it was a very similar story. I grew up in Nigeria for the first 9 years of my life, in and out. I had a brief two-year stop in Sweden, but majority of the first 9 years of my life was spent under two military dictatorships. So everything you can think of about a dictatorship was what I saw, like the ruthless suppression of opponents, muzzling of the press, countless human rights violations. And then in 1999, we started to transition to civilian rule. And all of a sudden, my dad's job as a diplomat is starting to take us to different parts of the world. Now, when I was 10 years old, I started to encounter difference for the first time, because you got to think about it. I had always been in a country with mostly, you know, black people that look like me and sound like me. But now I was now this skinny Nigerian kid with a thick Nigerian accent in a French speaking country in an American international school going through puberty. And so, in a place where everybody felt different, I felt different. And I really needed to figure out how to understand my identity. And as a 10 year old, the last thing you want to do is to, you know, stand out for the wrong reasons. And at the time, you know, my accent, my food, my skin color, my hair, everybody was pointing everything out. And I was like, what? This is so crazy as a 10-year-old to deal with. And so I remember going through a moment of, you know, really, really long, you know, sadness, real long sadness, and trying to figure out how to understand what it was like to love oneself as a 10-year-old. And it really came from me looking deep within. I started to really investigate what it is about my identity that I could love. And I started to, hey, what are the things you like to do? I just really started to dive into my passions. And at the time, even now still, it was sports. And so as I started to dive into sports, I started to look at, well, who in sports do you like and why do you like them? And then back then we had dial-up internet. I'm not even that old, but we had dial-up internet. And so I would print out all these papers of my favorite athletes, you know, in tennis and in basketball. So Allen Iverson at the time, you know, Pat Rafter, Andrew Roddick, all these people. And I would just study their routines. And I could see that in order for them to be the best at what they were doing, they needed to really focus on some sort of discipline. And so I started to do the same sort of thing. I committed to learning about, you know, myself, or the things that really elevated me to be the best version of myself. And so it'd be waking up early, making sure I studied sports, but also making sure I read X amount of books that were centered around personal development. And then gradually I started to use sports to make friends. And as I made more friends, I had an aha moment where I started to see that sports allowed me to connect to people from different parts of the world. And it didn't really matter where we came from. What mattered was we had a common goal. And for some reason, as an 11, 12 year old, that excitement of finding that you could find common goals through passions really got me down this path of investigating different cultures. So I started writing and studying different cultures and seeing how we could bridge cultural divides. It's just funny that this is what I was interested in. So after sports, I would come back and I'll just write, hey, I know that Dutch guy like this and this American guy like this. What if I could find a way to do that? And I didn't really think anything of it. I just thought it's kind of a cool hobby I have. And so I came back to Nigeria, and all of a sudden I was now this pseudo American-ish guy who wasn't Nigerian enough. And I was like, oh, here we go again. I know now, except this time it wasn't people making fun of me. It was more people that sort of put me on this weird pedestal where they didn't feel like they could talk to me because I was different. And like this guy is elevated. He plays different sports and he's so cultured and he's removed from us. And I just wanted to tell everybody that I'm actually just Nigerian, that's my my passport. And so by the time I got to 17 years old, I realized that the world has a lot of binary systems. And we live in a world of nuance and it tries to place you in different boxes.
I know from my own experience as a parent that I encourage my children to find their path, their way, and their voice in the world. But I also know that in their peer groups and at school, being different can make children feel isolated from the main group. It's cool to be different, except when it's not. Staying true to yourself while being tested from your peer group and the wider society is a test of character, and it often happens at an early age if you don't seem to fit in with the rest of your peer group, the herd. Popular movies often explores this with movies like Happy Feet, Mulan, Shrek, and many other movies that explore the theme of the struggle, both internal and external, of being different. And in Tayo's case, it wasn't just his peer group that defined difference as being a reason to feel isolated or picked on. Tayo's cultural background had quite clearly defined roles and definitions of success. Tayo had a conscious decision to make about what his own definition of success would be and how that would define him. But how do you do that as a 17-year-old? And how has he continued to press that forward since then?
Well, so it's not dissimilar for Nigerians. Nigerians, you know, there's this joke, you know, if you're not a lawyer, engineer, or doctor, you're a failure. So that was also a definition of success. But at 17, my dad got posted to Vietnam. And so, and I just graduated from high school. So we were in this moment of limbo where I would briefly stay in Vietnam and then we'll decide what college I was going to. So the college I eventually went to was Liberty University in Virginia, which is ironically one of the most conservative schools in the world. Then, you know, but so I just realized that as I was graduating and I was reflecting, because that's what happens when you're graduating, you reflect. And I understood that I didn't want to have to hide aspects of myself because of people feeling that this guy's a good two shoes, this guy's too idealistic, this guy wants to change the world. Why can't you think about other things? You know, and those are the things that people would argue me about. They'd be like, why do you care so much about the world? You're just 16. Why do you talk so seriously? Can't you have fun? I was like, you know what? In this new journey, this new environment, as I'm going to college in Virginia, it's the first time I'm going to be in America, I am going to utilize every asset that I can have, and they say America's the land of opportunity, and I'm going to learn as much about as many people as I can, ironically, in a very conservative environment. So I came to America when I was 17, and I joined every club I could, joined all the, I led two nonprofits in their marketing division, and I don't normally break any rules anyway in terms of like curfew or anything like that, so that stuff didn't bother me, but I was always understanding people and getting involved with different things. So when it came time for me to graduate, I thought I had a good sense of what I wanted to do. You know, I was like, okay, I've amassed this amount of knowledge. I really understand how to run marketing and nonprofits. So I graduated a marketing degree and I started applying for jobs and I applied to over 85 jobs and they all said no. You know, they all said either some degree of you're too young, too idealistic, you're not a citizen, so we don't sponsor. And so, you know, as a 21-year-old who's about to get into the real world and is looking for a way to be sponsored to stay in the United States, I was freaking out. And I reached out to every single person that had offered me an internship before. And I just said, hey, this is my situation. You know, I worked for you before. Okay. So I was like, okay, well, please, do you have anything? And so it was right around the time of social media. So 2011 was when I graduated, but I had started to do this thing where I got on every social media platform early because as I was looking at my peers who are American citizens, I saw that they had the American citizen stamp, which gave them an advantage over me, and they either had maybe relationships or different sort of connections with people. So I just said to myself, if I stand out on social media, I don't know if it's going to be big or not. I think this will help me on my resume. And so one of my people that I was applying to said, hey, I noticed you have over 10,000 followers on Twitter. Maybe you can come do the same thing for us over here. And so I said, yes, I would love to. I mean, nobody understands it. I've been saying Twitter is amazing. and so they hired me and I was like, I was supposed to do the social media. But then they switched my role. They said, we don't believe in social media. It's just, I don't know what this thing is. You're going to do sales. And now I had this job to make $10,000 every month without any orientation. So that was my quarter, $10,000. And I was now in this position where I felt like I couldn't be ungrateful because they sponsored me, but I was in a job that I hated. And this was a job that, you know, I felt like I could do in 3 hours max, maybe 2 to 3 hours.
Yeah.
And I was stretching it out to 8 to 8 hours just so I could, you know, I guess clock in, clock out. And then one day, I was driving to work in my burgundy Toyota Camry at the time, August 22, 2012. And I got to the part where the road merged into the highway. And then all of a sudden, you know, I was cruising, you know, I was cruising 60 miles an hour like you're supposed to. And then once I got there, my lane got cut to half. Because this neighboring car had lost control and I was swerving out of the way so I wouldn't get hit. But in the process, I smashed into the left guardrail. One car, two cars, right guardrail, back to the left guardrail. Now, this time it hit the guardrail with such impact that the car was perpendicular to the bridge and it was about to flip over. And there I was, 22 years old. And the only thought that came to my head was, have you done everything you said you were going to do? You're this kid that had all these dreams of connecting cultures and bridging cultural divides, Nelson, the late Nelson Mandela and Oprah Winfrey, your role models, and you're about to die. You didn't do anything you said you were going to do. And, you know, I also, adrenaline's kicking in, so I slammed my brakes and I somehow managed to get out of the car. And my car was completely totaled. There were two other cars hit, but nothing happened to me. Nothing happened to me. And I just realized that that was my wake-up call, and I started plotting to quit my job. So I quit my job shortly after that, after I started to get admission letters from New York. And I was like, okay, I am going to go to New York. New York has always been the backdrop of my favorite movies. And they always say, it's New York. And so, and it, also, you know, there was that Jay-Z and Alicia Keys song. I was like, it's, I'm going to New York. And so I moved to New York. And then, you know, while I was going to get my MBA at Fordham, I essentially made New York City my campus. And I launched my podcast. I started writing more and more. And, you know, my blog posts started to become super popular. But what I started to do was I said, I'm going to be super intentional about my tribe. This is something that's also good with wealth. If you want to be wealthy socially, you have to know what you, who your tribe is and who you influence. So I had found this term called third culture kid. Essentially, it refers to people who spent the formative periods of their lives outside of the parents' culture. And so diplomatic kids, army brats, you know, missionary kids. And so I just joined every single group that I saw on Facebook. And on, I created a list on Twitter, hashtag TCK. And I would just embed myself in that community. And they said, do you want to speak to some diplomatic kids? You grew up as a diplomatic kid. And that was when I realized that I couldn't just podcast and write. I could also speak. And the speaking opened the door for me to understand that I could also consult. And I just started to take ownership of my career more and more. And so when it came time for me to graduate, I did something that no Nigerian is supposed to do when you have an MBA. I just said, I'm not going to use my MBA, which freaked my parents out. They're like, well, you were going to do what with a podcast? What's a podcast?
Well, you're also not a lawyer, doctor, engineer, so you're already a failure. So why not, right?
Yeah, I'm already counting all the strikes. And so, but I just really believed in it and I kept doing it. And, you know, there was smatterings of success here and there and there, but it wasn't until the 2016 election that it really picked up, because all of a sudden the results led people to start researching how to have political discussion, what's diversity and inclusion, all these things. And everything I had been writing kept popping up in people's search results, and people were starting to like, oh, this guy doesn't, he hasn't just written this. He's talked about it here. He's, you know, there are more articles here. And, people started to reach out, and I remember I got my first two TEDx talks, after 2 years of trying. And then I've been able to get two more since then, and those were invitations. Sometimes your environment could include anchors. It could be your friends, your families, or people who just don't understand your vision. But you need to go to a place where you can maximize who you are. You can fail, you can succeed, but you can learn as well. And that's how you have to see it. And so stepping out of your comfort zone gives you an advantage point of looking at problems from different points of view, but studying your craft allows you to understand how to solve that problem. And then you become just someone that's tremendously hireable.
Very oftentimes, people say they want to change themselves, their job, their relationships, their health. But how do you get enough motivation to do that, not just dream or talk about it? For Tayo, the car crash sounded like a massive jolt to the system that forced him to reconsider many aspects of his life and brought up a moment for him that really opened his eyes. How do you create the opportunity and motivation to make that change? How does that happen?
Well, you're so right when you bring up the fact that we fall in love with this comfort zone. And with this idea, many of us have this fear of failure. That was the same thing I had before the accident. But after the accident, my fear became fear of not achieving my potential. And so what happened with that accident was I realized how short life was, because I think we take life for granted, many of us. And I had forgotten that, having lived in two dictatorships, I'd forgotten how precious life could be. And then that car accident reminded me that tomorrow is not promised. And so every time you try to put something off because you're trying to make an excuse or make yourself feel more comfortable, you're actually taking away from your growth. And I think what people have fallen in love with sometimes when they're in jobs they don't like is, you know, you have the different stories, you know, well, I have this debt, or I have to, you know, I have a family, or I'll do it later, or my parents are going to be mad at me, and different things like that. First of all, acknowledge that, yes, obviously those are valid concerns, but think about how you're doing a disservice to the world and yourself by not even being the best version of yourself. You know, eventually people that love you and want the best for you will come around to whatever it is that you do, if it's something that makes you happy. But you shouldn't sacrifice your happiness at the expense of others who are doing things that make them happy. You know, that's an imbalanced equation, and that's a poverty mindset. It's not wealthy in that sense.
Well, I think that's what, you know, they say, right? The best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is right now. And, you know, you gotta go in that sense. For that story and for what you shared there in terms of that change, it sounds like what you were saying is that you went from kind of the fear of loss, right? Like maybe I lose my status in this country. Maybe I don't get someone to sponsor me, to the fear of what you would miss out on gaining.
Yes, absolutely.
Is that fair to say?
Yeah. Poverty to abundance mindset. Essentially.
Talk to us more about that poverty and abundance mindset, what you've learned about that as you speak to people on multiple continents.
Yeah. Well, so every continent has different cultures who define, you know, success a different way. It's how much money you make, how big your family is, what's the status. But when you have a lack mindset or a poverty mindset, you find that you're always thinking about what would happen if you don't, if you don't do this, or who will hate you because of this, or what, you know, you're just thinking about other people and you're sacrificing your growth. But when you have an abundance mindset, you're not afraid of failure because you're understanding that everything is a growth opportunity. You're not fixing your mindset to a limited definition of success. You're saying, you know, I'm going to do this because I'm passionate about this and I'm curious about this. And if I fail, I'm going to learn how I can pivot. But if you have a poverty mindset, you're like, if I fail, that's the end of me, and it's going to ruin my reputation, and then I'm going to hide in the closet, and I'll never come out. That's a very subtle shift in that. But if you do that from a lack mindset, like, well, it'd be nice to have a New York Times bestseller, but I could settle for this. But then if that doesn't happen, then I'll settle for this. Because then you want to make yourself feel good enough to say, well, I technically didn't say that. I said, if I didn't do this. And so that's the sort of mindset. Don't be afraid to fail. I think people have had the wrong definition of failure, and they think it's the end all be all. But I failed so many times in my life, and I'm still here.
Shifting your thinking to a wealthy mindset, a mindset or internal viewpoint of abundance rather than restriction and poverty, but then taking that mindset and translating it into action to take steps, to move forward, to go beyond where you are today and on to where you want to be is a skill, and one that Tayo has clearly mastered. And Tayo has demonstrated that you can pursue something you're passionate about, something you love, something you're good at, and become wealthy financially and otherwise at the same time. So how do those two things, knowing yourself and then finding the right environment to succeed, play into that for him?
So great question. Thank you for asking and pulling me back to that, because the importance of knowing yourself involves, hey, what am I passionate about? What am I curious about? What problem do I want to solve? And how can I solve that problem knowing who I am? So if you reflect on those things, what am I passionate about? What am I curious about? What problem do I want to solve? And how does my personality solve that problem? You can start to see different things. How can I make sure it's something that I do in a service way? I can do that in multiple ways. Is it speaking? Is it podcasts? Is it courses? Is it books? And people can do that same lesson for themselves in different formats. But a lot of people I found don't know who they are because they haven't asked themselves. They haven't really sat down to reflect. I have people counter that mindset. I'm saying all things, being the same, who would you want to be if you could be that person? Don't just passively know that you're passionate about something. I love sports because of the camaraderie and the joy it gives me, just knowing that my competitive spirit is involved. And if my team wins, bam. But then why do you love what you love? How are you going to cultivate your internal drive? And you could do it through having external mentors through books or people that you admire, right? I've always printed out or read things from people that I couldn't gain access to, like the late Nelson Mandela. I would read everything about them and I would just reverse engineer what their daily routines were. So how can you do that? Or find a physical mentor that you can actually, that can keep you accountable. And then the environment matters because I don't know how else to say this, but when you are around people that are negative, it's going to impact you. Show me your five friends and I'll tell you who you are. And so if you don't surround yourself with people that challenge you to be the best version of yourself, you're going to inevitably be complacent. And so knowing who you are lets you to know what type of environment you need to be. And knowing what type of environment you need to be lets you know how to place yourself in there. And when you place yourself in there, you set more appropriate goals for you to become that best version of yourself. As you're doing the self-awareness, you're also going to understand who needs your problem. Like who needs that problem solved? Because you're going to ask yourself what problem you can solve, and then you're going to do the same thing. And for me, when I looked around me, who needs to understand how to connect effectively across cultures? I boiled it down to a few factors. Institutions. Companies need to know how to hire people from different backgrounds to make them feel safe enough to be themselves. Schools, education systems, institutions, they need to know how to create inclusive curriculums as well, because that's going to impact the next set of global leaders. And so once I knew who the people were, start to find out who the decision makers were in those areas. But you want to start to say, hey, this is who I am. This is what I do. I'd love to come to your place to just maybe do a workshop or do a free consultation for you. The only thing I'll ask for is maybe a referral and maybe if I could record it, if it's something that you want. And so when you start to have referrals and people leaving testimonials, then you start to build credibility. So not only do you have something that people can see, maybe in a video format or an audio format or written format, then they now see that it's backed by people in the industry. And so when you're pitching to the next person, you can start to charge because, it's already been backed and here it is. This is what they said. And so now it's time for you to take a chance on me. And so I kept doing that. I'll go back and forth, do that back and forth. The reason why I took the World Bank was I knew that would give me some form of credibility to gain access into another opportunity. And so same thing with United Nations. So when you take the World Bank and United Nations or TEDx, all these things are free essentially, but they give you credibility that allows you to get into different doors that you could potentially even have more influence in.
So, you've come to this place. You're still a young man. You're making an impact on the world, and pursuing a passion you have, telling your story, knowing yourself. And I know that you're really passionate about leadership, about building leaders, right? And so talk to me more, Tayo, about, this third part of wealth we oftentimes talk about on the Wealthwise podcast, which is motivation, right? How have you maintained that? And how has that grown as you've pressed further into this field that you're so passionate about?
Wow, motivation. I think when I look at my life, near-death experience, car accident, fired twice, over 80 plus job rejections, constant back and forth in terms of being broke or not. I always come down to one thing, and it's always, I'm here for a reason. And if I'm here for a reason, That means that someone needs something that I'm doing. And I'm definitely a spiritual person. And so for me, the way that I find motivation is always reflecting on, you know, the things that people have said about the work I've done. And also just understanding that my mission isn't halfway done. I want to impact 3 billion people's lives because, they're 3 billion people under 30. Those are the next set of global leaders. But just this last weekend, we saw the tragedy that happened with the shootings. And we've been seeing more and more different types of things happening across the world based on culture divides. And so it's hard for me not to be motivated to do work because I know in my heart that I'm placed here to bridge cultural divides. And when it constantly happens, I tend to channel that in a way that I need to get back to work. So now someone listening might say, sadness makes them go back crawl into a ball. But for some reason, I've always been impacted tremendously by challenges. when someone tells me I can't do something, or when someone tells me something that can't be done, it just inspires me to do it more and more. And so I've always had that tenacity, I guess. and it's there, and it's that chip on the shoulder is something that I've always had, because people have always overlooked me in terms of age or race or nationality. And I think my parents always cultivated that healthy confidence in some way. They say, hey, look, you're this is who you are, you can do it. And so it's a bit of nature and nurture for me, but honing it on purpose is something that I've learned to do. And that's by surrounding myself with people that I know challenge me and won't let me be any less than I am supposed to be.
Yeah, right on. Well, let me just finish, I got three more questions for you. If you still have time, I want to respect your time here, Tayo.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I know we have a lot of people in our audience that listen because they desire to be wealthy, right? And so what advice would you give others who are looking to build their wealth, to do, to avoid, and even how they should be viewing wealth itself?
I'll tell them to look at wealth holistically, exactly the way you look at wealth. And it's much more than financially. It's spiritually, it's physically, it's mentally. So when you wake up, what are five things you want to do, right? And how are you going to make sure you do them today? And there's a great sense of accomplishment that you feel once you just accomplish those micro goals, because they do add up. Another task I would say for someone thinking about that is start a list of just in your Evernote or your journal, just say, hey, every day I'm going to make a list of how I'm going to solve a particular problem. It doesn't have to be something big or small. It could just be like, hey, these are five ways I can make video game movies actually more profitable because every one of them is bombed. Or it could be five ways that I can tackle toxic masculinity, just anything. But that mental exercise of solving problems is going to sharpen your thinking in such a way where you're going to just be like, oh, wow, I'm staying in tune and I'm reading. But if you know your learning style, and you craft your lifestyle around that learning style, if it's videos you watch, documentaries, or things like that, you're going to feel much better. I have problems with how the education system sometimes insists there's only one type of learning style, or they don't cultivate to different people with different needs. But I think if we know our learning styles, everything I said will be a lot easier for you to cultivate.
Well, here's another question for you. Tayo, on your path to building wealth in all of its forms, what's the one big thing, the truth, the piece of wisdom that you have learned that has brought you through it all to where you are today?
Oof. Patience and big picture thinking. I've mentioned Nelson Mandela a lot in this podcast. He spent 27 years in jail, and I'm turning 30 this October. And throughout most of my life, he's spent that 27 years in jail has been older than I've been. And I keep thinking about how he came out of jail with an even bigger legacy. He came out, at an age where people would be like, oh, you should be retired. And his ability to be a big picture thinking and see how he could solve a problem of racial divide and bring people together is something I think we can all learn. Patience for me is something that I would definitely reflect on. Radical self-awareness is one I keep saying that, and a commitment to seeing things from different perspectives. Whether you're an entrepreneur, whether you're a finance person, whether you are a yoga teacher, finding a way to be a minority where you are on purpose on a weekly basis, you know, allows you to see the world in a different way. You know, we are more diverse than we've ever been, and internet makes the world even smaller. So understanding the world from a unique lens is very important. So patience, self-awareness, and committing to being a minority everywhere you are on purpose is something I would say.
I love that. I absolutely love that. You know, that minority on purpose is because of this perspective it gives you, right? I think sometimes we we don't even recognize, you know, I mean, as a person, you know, from a Caucasian background, someone, you know, said, oh, you have a culture too. I'm like, no, I don't. I mean, this is much younger in my life. No, I don't. You know, we don't have culture. Like, no, it's just the majority culture, right? So you don't even know where you're swimming in, like a fish in water. I really appreciate that. How can our listeners find out more about you, follow you, and all the great things that you're doing?
Well, you can find out more about me on my digital home, tayoroxson.com, tayoroxson.com. And I'm at tayoroxson on Instagram and every social media platform, Twitter, LinkedIn. I also have a book coming out, so please pre-order or order whenever the episode comes out. It's called Use Your Difference to Make a Difference. That's my mission statement. And I'm also coming up with some courses along the line. So everything is on my website. And looking forward to connecting.
I appreciate your time. I appreciate your words of wisdom here to our audience. And I hope the book makes you that New York Times bestseller that you were mentioning before.
Oh, well, that would be great. Thank you so much.
Sure thing. Sure thing. Well, Tyra Roxson, thanks for your time today. All
right, thank you so much for having me.
Pleasure. Well, that's a wrap for this episode. Thanks for listening. I invite you to visit RagingBull.com/podcast. That's RagingBull.com/podcast to discover more episodes and to learn more about people who have created, built, and lived successful lives. Also, remember to subscribe to one of Raging Bull's newsletters. Join me on the next episode as we share more stories from our guests on the wisdom behind wealth and how they built their own success. Raging Bull Podcast is brought to you by RagingBull.com, helping traders succeed through education, resources, and where you can watch real traders make trades. Raging Bull, learn to trade. We'll show you how.